mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, it's Better World Week, showcasing the power of students to change the world while transforming schools into hubs of opportunity for all through something called expeditionary learning. We'll explain. Also this morning, it's been a long time coming, but the new Allen H. Davis Judicial Center will hold an official ribbon cutting and open house later today. Don't look now, but Mother's Day is right around the corner. We have great gift ideas she's sure to love, and a collection of wine recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, May 2nd, 2025. Kind of interesting story that I saw on the newswire this morning is the spring housing market gets into full swing. Home shoppers enjoy more for sale options than in any month dating all the way back to mid-2020. So as we're getting into the heart of the home buying and selling season, it is a good time for home shoppers. However, there is a bit of a mismatch between where buyers are looking and where the inventory is building. The Wall Street Journal and Realtor.com are out with their housing market ranking, highlighting in-demand metros that are competitive, but with good reason, as they offer a lower cost of living, a lower cost to purchase a home, in or near economic hubs. So that's kind of the qualifiers for this. Lower cost of living, including lower cost for homes in or near economic hubs. And the top market all across the country, the very top market is Toledo, Ohio. How about that? Seen strong demand, a snappy market pace, and significant price growth over the past year. So Toledo, Ohio, number one. And they say it's a median listing price of $235,000 for a home in Toledo. That's almost $200,000 lower than the national median, which is up over $400,000. So definitely a value proposition in Toledo. These are numbers from March, by the way, $235,000, the median listing price in Toledo in March. Several other nearby housing markets make the list as well, including Canton Massillon at number 5 on the list, Akron at number 6, Youngstown at number 18, and Dayton at number 19. So Ohio pretty well represented on the list. In addition, nearby Fort Wayne, Indiana is 13th on the list overall. So too shabby there in our general area for housing. That is certainly good news. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Kentucky Derby is coming up this weekend. Break out the fancy hats and the mint juleps. The first leg of the Triple Crown takes place on Saturday. The favorite to win in Louisville this year is a 3-year-old horse named Journalism. Journalism won the Santa Anita Derby and has 3-1 odds at last check. So Journalism is the favorite. Post time is 6:57 p.m. tomorrow Eastern time. Forecasters say it'll be partly cloudy with a high of 67 degrees on race day. And of course, the Kentucky Derby would not be the Kentucky Derby without the mint juleps. Nearly 120,000 of the signature drink will be served over the 2-day period at Churchill Downs leading up to the Kentucky Derby. Nearly 120,000 mint juleps. They will use over 10,000 bottles of bourbon, 1,000 pounds of freshly harvested mint, and 60,000 pounds of ice. And that's really all you need. Bourbon, mint, a little bit of sugar, and ice. And there you go. The mint julep became the official drink of the Kentucky Derby during the 1930s, but it was clearly a tradition well before it became quote-unquote official, according to historical records at Churchill Downs. It is even believed that Churchill Downs planted mint outside the clubhouse for the very first juleps to be made in 1875. So they were actually locally sourcing this all the way back to the 19th century, in the very beginning of the Kentucky Derby. Oldest continuously running sporting event in North America, if not the world, the Kentucky Derby. So, kind of interesting there. A couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know this morning. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. I saw this and I thought, this is one of those things that make you go, The state of California has announced that they will update their license plates beginning next year because they are running out of available combinations of letters and numbers. They're running out. Since 1980, the license plates in California have used a format with one number followed by three letters and then three more numbers. So 1ABC234. That's the way the license plates go in California. They've been doing this. It used to be just three letters, three numbers, but they were running out of combinations. So they added an extra number back in 1980. And for 45 years, that's the way it's been. The new format should provide the new format will have three numbers, three letters, and then one final number. So it's the same, but they've just shuffled the digits around. The new format, they say, should provide plenty of combinations to last for about a decade. So this combination they're using now lasted for 45 years. They're going to use basically the same combination, but just switch things around, and they'll be out of numbers again in about 10 years. That's how many more cars are on the road in California than there were 40 plus years ago. The last license plate made with the current format will be 9ZZZ999. Now, if you do the math, the current format allows for 175,760,000 unique combinations. And there are some that are restricted they don't use, but just in general. Nearly 175.8 million combinations. The new format will create another 175,760,000 unique combinations. And it will last for a decade or so. Starting to see why there are so many traffic jams in California. Why these traffic in California is so legendary. That's a lot of cars on the road. There aren't that many people that live in California, but that's a lot of cars. My goodness. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Do you believe in UFOs? Speaking of California. All things weird. No, do you believe in UFOs? Almost half of Americans say that they believe that the government is hiding UFO information. There were congressional hearings and Pentagon reports recently that acknowledged unexplained encounters by military personnel. From time to time, they look into this in Congress, in the government. A new poll from News Nation finds 44% of those surveyed believe information on UFOs is being hidden by the government. 28% say, forget about it. It's crazy talk. So more believe than do not believe. The poll found that young Americans are particularly suspicious of what the government knows and what they are telling us about what they know. 49% of Gen Zers and 48% of millennials believe in government UFO secrecy, compared to just 34% of baby boomers. So, I don't know. The truth is out there. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, researchers from Toronto have discovered that people interpret karma differently. Have you ever said that? Have you ever noticed somebody kind of gets their comeuppance and you say, hey, karma, right? Well, when they asked, when these researchers, Toronto, when they asked about karma in their own lives, they found that we tend to think of positive examples of karma that apply to ourselves. But when asked about other people's karma, we tend to think of the negative. When something bad happens to someone else, that's karma. When something good happens to us, that's karma. When study participants described karma impacting others, 92% focused on negative events. 92%. However, those beliefs, they did note, the researchers noted that these beliefs did vary by culture. Americans tend to see karmic events as rewards for their own good behavior and punishment for others' bad behavior. In countries where karma has deep religious roots, the double standard was less dramatic. So, when it's something bad and it happens to someone else, that's karma. When it's good and happens to us, that's also karma. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather, a chance of showers today, a high in the lower 70s, chance of showers tonight, a low in the 50s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says a vehicle crashed into the Pilot Travel Center on State Route 613 at the Van Buren exit of Interstate 75. The Sheriff's Office said a 36-year-old man from Toledo lost control of his vehicle while exiting from southbound Interstate 75, crossed State Route 613, entered the parking lot of the Pilot, and crashed through the side of it. The driver was transported to Blanchard Valley Hospital for his injuries. The sheriff's office said the Pilot Travel Center sustained major damage from the impact, but there were no customers in the store as it was closed for renovations. Get more in this story on our website. The United Way of Hancock County says more than 850 volunteers will be spread out across project sites throughout the county during its Days of Caring event next week. Days of Caring matches employees of area corporations and small businesses with nonprofits and other service agencies in need of some extra hands. The volunteers will complete more than 80 landscaping, building, organizing, painting, planning, and construction projects for 32 different organizations. United Way of Hancock County CEO Kelly McClurkin says it's exciting to think about the impact more than 850 volunteers can make in a community in 1 week, and soon we'll be able to see the results of their hard work throughout the county. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland has some new members.
Johnny was a schoolboy when he heard his first Beatles song.
After months of waiting and voting by you, the fans, here's the class of 2025 Rock Hall of Fame inductees. They are in the performer category, Bad Company, Chubby Checker, Joe Cocker, Cyndi Lauper, Outkast, Soundgarden, and the White Stripes. For the Musical Influence Award, the inductees are Salt and Pepper and Warren Zevon. The induction ceremony will be held live Saturday, November 8th in Los Angeles.
Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, if there is one thing that I think everyone can agree on, it's that we all want our kids to get a top-notch, well-rounded education. Now, there are plenty of ideas on the best way to accomplish that goal, but this is one that probably doesn't get as much attention. I know certainly our next guest would say it doesn't get as much attention as it should. The week of April 28th through May 2nd is Better World Week, which focuses on how students can make the world a better place. And joining us this morning is EL education expert Jessica Wood. EL, in this case, stands for Expeditionary Learning. Jessica, explain what that is.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to talk to you about this. So EL Education is a nonprofit that partners with public schools across the country. And Better World Week is a national celebration of student-led service and activism, because at EL Education, we believe that students can do challenging, meaningful, and beautiful work, and Better World Week is all about showcasing that. So this year, schools across the country are turning student passion into action through local service projects that reflect their own community's needs.
So this is getting kids out into the community. How is this different from, say, a school field trip, or, you know, like what we probably all remember from our childhood?
Yeah, I think the difference is it's linked directly to rigorous academic learning. So this is born in the classroom with topics that students are learning about, and they're using that as a springboard to go out into their communities and create real change. You know, we really believe that when students volunteer like this, they build leadership, confidence, empathy, skills that last a lifetime, because it helps young people see themselves as change makers, not just future leaders, but leaders right now.
That was going to be one of my questions, too, about how volunteering can make a positive impact on the students' future, both in and outside of the classroom. And we're talking about what ages here?
So we have as young as preschool students, kindergarten students, who are really engaging in meaningful service acts early on in their education. So students as young as 4, 5, 6 can really be engaged in school. And what we see is that doing meaningful work like this means that they'll stay engaged and they'll continue civic involvement into adulthood.
So let's give some examples of some of the projects that are happening this year, especially, I don't know if there are those in Northwest Ohio that you can kind of highlight, but some of the projects that are happening this year in conjunction with Better World Week.
Sure. I'd love to tell you about one from Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
So students at Marquette Elementary in Madison are turning public service announcements into real-world action. So during class, they've found topics that they are passionate about, and they've created public service announcements on their own, and then they take it a step further, and they create advocacy-focused stickers based on their PSA topics, and they share those around the school and throughout their local community to raise awareness and spark conversation. So this one's a real creative, student-driven project and a great way to amplify young voices. Another one of my favorites is Conway Academy in Escondido, California, where every grade in their school is involved in a massive community effort. You see students creating pollinator gardens, restoring native plants around their school community, and even organizing a school-wide picnic to raise awareness about reducing plastic use. So it's all hands-on, it's deeply connected to what they're learning in the classroom, and it's built around the values that they want to see in their world.
How much of this is driven by the students themselves? I mean, do they select the projects? Do they build this out, or is that kind of set up for them to participate, if you understand what I'm asking?
Oh, I understand exactly. Because I think sometimes when people hear student-led, they imagine that adults just step right out of the room and let students, you know, kind of do their thing.
Right.
And as educators, we know that they deserve all of our support. And so when we say student-led, we really mean that the passion and ideas are coming from students because they are fully supported by adults in classrooms. So we have extremely expert educators who are really helping students grow and nurture their great ideas by giving them resources and really feeding their curiosity. It's a partnership between students and teachers.
So it really, again, we talk about Better World Week. This is really about empowering students to make the world a better place.
That's exactly right. And helping them realize that they have the power to do that within themselves.
Which, again, is a skill or a mindset that will carry them much further than just within the classroom, within their studies, but obviously has a beneficial effect there as well. Again, Jessica Wood is an EL education expert. Where do we get more information about this expeditionary learning?
Sure. So you can learn more at eleducation.org/betterworldweek25. You'll find inspiring student stories. You'll see project highlights there. And there's also ways to support or get involved, find out more about what's happening right around you locally. And then you can also follow us on social media at EL Education to see how students are making a better world every day.
Pretty cool stuff. We'll have a link on our webpage for more information. Folks can find that there. Jessica Wood, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take good care.
Well, certainly was a long time coming, but the Hancock County Probate and Juvenile Court and several other agencies now operating out of the brand new Allen H. Davis Judicial Center downtown. And later today, they will be holding an official ribbon cutting and open house ahead of this evening's art walk for people to get a firsthand look. So if you want to head down for art walk a little early and check that out. In case you missed it, back in February, we spoke with Commissioner Tim Bechtel about the new facility downtown. Was it worth it? I mean, did the Hancock County taxpayers get their money's worth?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This building will last for a long time, certainly longer than our lives. And it brings so many services together under one roof.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done before in the past with the Vehicle Service Center and the Ag Service Center, bringing multiple agencies that are related together to help the people, one-stop shop.
Using that kind of as a template, obviously this has been a long time in coming. It was a long time in planning. It was for many years cussed and discussed. There will be those who will say, for all of the months and years that we spent talking about this, we could have done this many years ago, maybe. But I wonder, were it not for all of the pain of that and going through all of these other options, could you really have come up with what we have now without going through all of that?
No, it wouldn't have been the same. Mm-hmm. And it probably wouldn't have been as good. Mm-hmm. So we're very happy with the end result.
So what is in the new judicial center? I mean, clearly the probate juvenile court, that's kind of what started this whole thing. So you've got that, but what else?
Well, there's three floors. The public will come in just like the staff on the first floor. Mm-hmm. And there's a security entrance right there in the middle of the building under all that glass, right. central space. Mm-hmm. So that has staffed by the sheriff's department. And then you'll proceed one of two different ways. The rest of the first floor is all adult probation offices. So those folks that will be meeting with those officers will go off to the right into their own separate lobby there on the first floor. Everyone else will proceed upstairs. If you want to take the stairs, you can. There's also a public elevator. On the second floor, you can check in with the probate and juvenile court clerks right there outside of the lobby. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the juvenile probation officers on the second floor and also the domestic relations court, which we brought over from the first floor of the courthouse. That was in a space in the first floor of the courthouse that at one time had the county commissioners in that location before they were there. So now they're in the new building. Mm-hmm. Then on the third floor is the main courtroom with Judge Johnson, and also two magistrates' courtroom or hearing rooms for the probate and juvenile court. And then also the CASA offices, that's the court-appointed special advocates.
Right.
And the Family and Children's First Counsel offices, and also the Great Lakes Guardianship Service Board, which is headquartered here in Hancock County, but it serves all of Hancock County, Wood County, and Ottawa County.
Obviously, you are an architect by trade. Yep. So talk a little bit about that layout and that design of what goes where within the building. And that's very intentional in the design and the way it was laid out the way it was.
Well, it's ironic that we're sitting across the street from the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, because this building, like the Marathon Center, has a great deal of public front office space mm-hmm. that the public will be able to use. And then there's backstage space that is only going to be for the staff. Mm-hmm. So there's a fairly clean demarcation line there of what the public is going to be accessing and what the staff is going to be using to service all the folks using the building.
So very efficient in that.
Oh, yeah. And it also, because this building is fairly large, the footprint is similar in size to the historic courthouse mm-hmm. on the ground.
Yeah.
But once we get inside, because of its modern construction, it doesn't have all the thick stone walls. We actually get more space out of the interior because the walls aren't as thick with the more modern insulation.
That's interesting. So when you drive by and you look at that building, you look at the courthouse, and you say there's actually more usable space
in this new building.
And the key features, what are some of the key features? What are some of the things that you can do in this facility that weren't possible in the previous locations where all of these offices were?
Yeah, it's tough to pinpoint anything down.
Well, I know the first one that immediately popped into my mind in terms of key features, I would imagine, you know, obviously new constructions are built, you know, for modern technology, like internet access and all of that has got to be much easier, you know, in a new build versus some of these older locations,
yeah.
Just as an example. But are there others?
I think maybe just the synergy of all the different services that are involved in this building. You know, we're moving adult probation from the backside of our administrative building down there by Scramblers. Mm-hmm. So that brings that whole group of people into this mix.
Right. So more efficient in that.
Yeah, way. It's a lot more efficient. Yeah.
This is not, though, a full one-stop shop for county government.
No, this is to pick up a lot of the services that were scattered after the after the flood of 07, actually.
Was there some discussion of including, like, space for the commissioners, that kind of thing?
And no, we're happy where we're at. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have our offices are on the second floor of 514 South Main, mm-hmm. and so are the county prosecutors.
Right.
And then we have a great deal of record storage in that building as well.
So will there be any other movement of offices into spaces that have been vacated now by the various entities? They're now in the new judicial center.
Absolutely.
So there's a snowball effect.
We're still trying to sort out who's going to fit best where. Mm-hmm. But yeah, obviously the old church with the green roof has some historic value there.
Well, and that's really the next question. I mean, this whole matter is not necessarily done yet, because then the question becomes, and this has been discussed as well for quite a few months as the judicial center was under construction, what happens to that old space?
First and foremost, we have to go through and size up what we have and see what needs to be kept and what needs to go. Mm-hmm. We have our maintenance department in the backside of that building as well, so we got to make sure that we have adequate space for them, because they're very important to all the functions of all of our buildings downtown.
Right.
But, you know, we have a great deal of need for additional records retention. We also have our public defenders who are in rental space. So we're looking for any viable options there to reuse that space as best as possible.
Our conversation from back in February with Hancock County Commissioner Tim Bechtel upon the opening of the Allen H. Davis Judicial Center, as those offices started to move in, the probate and juvenile court and other entities within county operations moving in earlier this year. And the official ribbon cutting, as we mentioned, will be held today at 4:30. And, of course, an open house there for the public to see the interior of that brand spanking new building. Looks absolutely gorgeous in downtown Findlay. And then on the topic of what to do with the historic former probate juvenile court building at Dorney Plaza, the commissioners will be holding their Tuesday meeting there at that building with the folks from Heritage Ohio, who are in town for the preservation assessment preservation workshop sponsored by the Hancock Historical Museum, and they will be doing an assessment with the commissioners of the status of that building. So there will be news next week, most likely with respect to that as well. So the story continues, but again, the ribbon cutting and open house, the new Allen H. Davis Judicial Center downtown, will be held this afternoon at 4:30 ahead of Art Walk tonight. Well, in case you haven't checked the calendar lately, Mother's Day is right around the corner. It's not this weekend, but it's coming up next weekend. But if you're going to be shopping this weekend, we have perfect individual to help us sort out what we need to get for mom. Megan Murphy is with us, lifestyle expert, been with us any number of times on the program before. Megan, so many different options. Where's the best place to start when trying to decide what we're going to do for mom this Mother's Day?
So I've got a bunch of different gift options for you. Mother's Day is May 11th, and as a mom of three, this is my public service announcement, everybody. May 11th, we got to celebrate those moms.
That's right.
I always say, right, start with the gift of relaxation. I am a busy mom, and I know this is what I want. The Wahl Cordless Deep Tissue Percussion Massager gives mom that spa-like massage relief anywhere, anytime. So she's got 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. She can release that tension and relieve those achy muscles, whether she's a workouter or she's just got that tension from general stress. The Wahl Percussion Massager is great when it is fully charged, and I like things to be fully charged. You got 7 hours of runtime, 4 different heads, and it's got this long ergonomic handle. So for me, that's great because I get knots deep in my back that I can't reach otherwise. You can adjust the pressure, and it really kneads them out. This is available on Amazon, and the company is Wahl, W-A-H-L.
And 7 hours on a charge, that's a lot of stress relief right there.
It's double the competitors. It's pretty great.
Let's see here. And we mentioned the handmade gifts. You do have some stuff that kind of falls into that category.
Absolutely. So I love things that are DIY. I'm a real big DIYer. Anything that my kids have ever made me for Mother's Day is saved in a special memory box. And my go-to crafting tool is the Cricut. The new Cricut Explore 4 is 2 times faster than its predecessor. It is really the ultimate smart cutting machine. So it cuts, 100 plus materials from cardstock to iron-ons to vinyl. So you can make personalized projects and decor, banners, t-shirts, cards, mugs, you name it. And if you use the Cricut Design Space app, it's easier than ever. They give you templates, or you can freestyle and do it on your own if you're more advanced, but it really will hold your hand. If you go to Cricut, Cricut.com, you can learn more about the Cricut.
I'll tell you, I got my wife a Cricut a couple of years ago, and it was absolutely the best gift. She loves it. The other thing, too, is that there are all kinds of additional accessories and so on. That gives you an opportunity to get more gifts on down the line if you happen to be stumped. So
exactly. Here's the thing, too. You can make, it's really endless what you can make. I've done water bottles for kids' birthday party favors. I've done mugs for a friend with a cheer-up message. There's 100-plus materials that you can work with here. Yeah. And now this does, you'll appreciate this, it does a 12-foot continuous cut, so you could do bigger projects.
Yeah, that's what we need in our house, is more bigger stuff.
Like a big banner, right? Like a big Happy Mother's Day banner. That sounds like a really good idea.
What other go-to gifts do you have for a mom that she's sure to love?
Well, chocolate is always a good idea, and SLM chocolates are a luxury. It is an American luxury chocolatier based in Las Vegas. For Mother's Day, they did a 24-piece truffle collection. Decadent flavors, Bananas Foster, Kona Espresso. There's a passion fruit, and they are beautiful. They look like little jewels. They come in a gorgeous box. You can also do custom chocolate boxes. So there's a 12, 24, or 40-piece collection.
Okay.
So you pick out mom's favorite. I like the 40 piece because then mom's going to share, right? That's what I'm going to give to my mom to make sure she shares. And that is available on ethelm.com. And I want you to order by May 8th in order to get that in time for Mother's Day, which, reminder, is May 11th.
Okay.
The other thing, Chris, the gift of beauty. Every mom wants clear, glowy, healthy, beautiful skin. And Periva Beauty has a special Mother's Day bundle. I love a gift with purchase. They have bundled their best-selling three-step skincare regimen in the most adorable makeup bag, and it comes with a Gua Sha, which is a skincare tool that my teenage daughter taught me how to use. Love it, love it, love it. So in this, you're getting the C3 5.5 Firming Glow Serum, which is 30% vitamin C, the Coral 20 Gel Cream Moisturizer, which really mimics dermatological treatment that's going to help ease those not-so-fine lines. And then you have the RH 5.5 Hydrabond Primer, which is your ace of base. You put this on before makeup. Your makeup's going to last 8 hours. I mean, it really is a superpower trio. And this all comes bundled in this cute little gift bag with the Gua Sha. If you go to Periva, ParevaBeauty.com, you can shop this Mother's Day special. And also check out the before and afters. This guarantees results in 30 days, and you'll really be surprised by the dramatic transformations with use of the products for 30 days.
Hard to go wrong with any of those. They're all sure to be a big hit. But I'm thinking, you know what would be an even bigger hit would be all of them.
I love that, Chris. Yes.
I mean, there's no nothing saying that you have to just pick one. You can go with all of those.
I feel sorry for my kids because I already have all four.
Where do we get more information, Megan?
So the wall massager is available on Amazon. You can go to Cricut.com for the ultimate craft machine, SLM.com to snap up those chocolates, and ParivaBeauty.com for the Mother's Day bundle.
Very good. Lifestyle expert Megan Murphy with us once again this morning. Megan, thanks very much for taking the time. Happy Mother's Day.
And happy Mother's Day to your audience. Thank you so much, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You have breaking news, and then you have the news that's already broken. This is the odd and unusual side of the headlines. This is kind of interesting. It's not a dumb or a funny story, but it is one that is worth noting. And I saw this. You may have already heard about this, but I just saw it on the Newswire. The oldest person in the world has passed away. Sister Ina Canabaro Lucas passed away Wednesday in Brazil at the age of 116. Oldest person in the world, 116. Her death announced by the Congregation of Theresian Sisters of Brazil, who called hers a life of dedication and devotion. So now the mantle of world's oldest person passes to Ethel Catterham. She's an English woman who is 115 years old and believed to be the last surviving subject of King Edward VII. So, it's pretty amazing. 116 years old. I don't even know if I'd want to live to 116. You know what I mean? That's it. Speaking of odd and unusual items in the news, Luigi Mangione is now the subject of a new musical in San Francisco. The 26-year-old accused killer of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson is the inspiration for Luigi the Musical, which will premiere at the Taylor Street Theater next month. The synopsis of the 60-minute musical, so it's a very short piece, the synopsis reads, with real-life cellmate Sam Bankman-Fried and Diddy by his side. So obviously they're playing hard and loose with the facts here. Luigi navigates friendship, justice, and the absurdity of viral fame. All right. Creators claim to be taking inspiration from the musical Chicago in crafting this particular stage production. So. Wouldn't expect that to hit Broadway anytime soon, but you never know. That's, you never know. It is a crazy story. There's always got to be something out of the state of Florida, it seems like. They're always doing dumb things. This is not a dumb criminal thing, necessarily. But they're just doing weird, dumb things in general in the Sunshine State. Maybe it's all that sun is just frying their brains. I'm not sure, but a glass flower vase and the hot Florida sun turns out can be a dangerous combination. Hillsborough County, Florida. A man found that out the hard way. His home in Tampa caught fire. His home caught fire. And he says it was caused by a vase that he left outside to dry. Washed out a flower, glass flower vase, and the sun in Florida can be quite warm. Mr. Collier, I don't have his first name, says the fire inspector told him the sun was probably low enough that it hit the vase at just the right spot and, you know, focused the sun's rays to like the mulch outside of his home and caught it on fire. The home was not a total loss. There was some property damage, but thankfully no one was hurt. And I bet he won't do that again. Man, try to explain that to your insurance company, right? I mean, can you imagine? Well, here's how it happened. You see, this glass flower vase. Now, this is something that, I don't know, may make you feel a little uncomfortable. A 50-year-old Soviet space probe meant to explore the planet Venus is expected to crash back to Earth very soon. The Cosmos 482 probe was launched in 1972, but malfunctioned, never made it to Venus, and it has been stuck in Earth's orbit ever since. The dead spacecraft is about the size of a car, but here's the kicker. It was built to survive the hottest planet in our solar system, and they say as such, it might survive re-entry through Earth's atmosphere. Normally, when space junk falls out of the sky, it burns up in the atmosphere. But this was designed to withstand the hottest planet in our solar system, and therefore it might not burn up. And this thing is the size of a car that's going to fall somewhere on Earth. Scientists say the chance that it hits a person is about 1 in 10,000, which is a little tighter odds than I'm comfortable with. You know what I mean? 1 in 10,000? I'd feel much better if it was like 1 in 10 million or 1 in 10 billion, but no, 1 in 10,000, they say. And in any event, if something the size of a car strikes Earth from outer space, that could cause problems even if it doesn't hit someone directly. It is on track for re-entry sometime between May 7th and the 13th. So we may be talking about this again next week. Just forewarn you here. Wow. I don't mean to ruin your weekend, but it may be your last weekend. I don't know. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a group of scientists in the UK. Now, this is an interesting story because you remember in the past couple of weeks, there have been headlines about the people who are reintroducing extinct animals to the world. What did they do? What was the first animal? I don't remember. I know the next one, they want to reintroduce the woolly mammoth to the, it was an old extinct wolf. Genetic wolf that they reintroduced to the wild, and now they want to reintroduce the woolly mammoth to the planet. And you know, the narrative on this is whether or not this is a really smart thing to do because you upset the ecosystem and all of that. Reintroducing extinct species can cause all kinds of unintended consequences. You've seen Jurassic Park. Well, on that note, A group of scientists in the UK are working to create purses and totes made of the skin of dinosaurs. Is this why we need to reintroduce extinct species? Okay. The prehistoric hides would be grown from the fossilized remains of one of Earth's scariest creatures, the T-Rex. According to Che Cannon of Lab Grown Leather, quote, "We're unlocking the potential to engineer leather from prehistoric species, starting with the formidable T-Rex." And I'm growing a T-Rex, just apparently its skin, and I don't know how that works. But the collagen, it says here, the collagen that results from the project will probably resemble the hide of a cow. So, feel like cowhide, but it'll be T-Rex hide. By designer bag with T-Rex skin. Oh, man, that is... I can't believe that's in the UK, because that seems like a very American thing to do. You know what I mean? Let's reintroduce dinosaurs so that we can have designer handbags. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing is Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest Golf Club in Findlay. Register at HancockHOF.com under the Events tab. Registration fee is $300 per team or $75 per person. Proceeds from the outing benefit the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing, Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest. Register at HancockHOF.com. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. What's in a name? Well, it seems perhaps a family argument. Mumsnet, which is a London-based parenting and maternity website, commissioned a survey in which they found 20% of grandparents do not like their grandchild's name. One in five grandparents don't like the name that their kids have given to their grandkids. The top names hated by grandparents, according to the survey: Aurora, Charlotte, Elijah, Finn, Jack, Lindsay, Noah, Sally, and Tabitha. 28% of the grandparents in the survey say that their grandchild's name is ugly. That's brutal. 17% think that it's just weird. 11% say it's too old-fashioned. 11%, another 11% said it reminded them of someone they didn't like. And 6% dislike the spelling. And I know parents today are real big on unique spelling of kids' names, and grandparents not all that high on that idea. There were 2,000 parents and grandparents questioned for this survey, and I thought this was kind of interesting. You would think that maybe giving your grandchild or giving your child a family name would end all of the arguments. There can't be any controversy with that, right? Well, 11% of grandparents admit that they are annoyed when the child's parents use a family name related to the other side of the family. 6% say that 6% of grandparents say they are annoyed that the parents did not use their suggested name. I would never be so bold as to suggest a name to my kids for their kid. You know, I had my turn. This is their turn. But 6% say that they are annoyed that the parents did not use their suggested name. 6% said they wish they had used a family name, but from their side of the family, not the other side of the family. So how did the unapproving grandparents react when told of the grandchild's name that they didn't like? 4% responded in silence. You know, when they don't say anything, that is, you kind of get the cold shoulder. 9% responded with something like, "What?" Had an exasperated reaction. 8% tried to be diplomatic. In other words, they lied, saying that they loved the name, even though they didn't. The good news, I guess, is that over time, 39% say that they have come to terms with their grandchild's weird name, although 4% said that they still have not accepted the name of their grandbaby. Of the parents that were surveyed, 15% admitted that at least one grandparent dislikes the baby's name. So they know this. Even if you're trying to hide it, they know this. 2% of the parents, or 2% of grandparents said that they have had falling outs with their children over the name that they chose for their children. 2% have had falling outs, family falling outs. 6% even shared that they fell completely out of contact, at least for a time, due to a name disagreement. That's just stunning to me. Those grandparents who have not gotten used to the hated name will sometimes avoid mentioning the child's name when talking about their grandkids to others. 17% just won't use the name. 17% say they use the name begrudgingly. 6% say they avoid saying their grandchild's name at all. However, 69% of grandparents said that it is all right for them to give their opinions on their grandchild's name, although it is not their place to give uninvited suggestions. Meanwhile, 38% of parents said it's none of the grandparents' business. It's none of your business. And 31% of grandparents agreed with that sentiment. Wow. So what's in the name? Apparently, some family drama, as it turns out. So once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio to finish up the week with another collection of recipes from Kyra's kitchen. And it strikes me earlier mentioning that we had wine recipes today. not recipes, I should have clarified, not recipes for making wine.
No.
That's not that kind of, we're cooking.
That would be dangerous.
We're cooking with wine.
Yes.
For these recipes today. And this first one is really good. I know you went last weekend. You had a girls' weekend away.
Yes.
And we had this
Geneva and did all the wine, did a bunch of the wineries.
And this was a dish, a
signature dish.
Yeah, that you had at one of the wineries.
Yes.
And brought it back. Made it earlier this week, and these were yummy.
Yeah.
These are red wine burgers.
Yes. So my best friend and I, we decided we wanted to try these. So we tried them that Saturday, and they were amazing. So then I had to come home and make my husband a guinea pig also. So you guys will love this. It's so good.
This is a really good recipe.
Yes. So it's 1 pound ground beef, 1.5 cups of red wine, 1 shallot minced, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, 3 burger buns, and 4 slices of your favorite cheese, Gouda, Swiss, whatever. The more tart cheese, I felt tasted, it just made it tasty. It
brought out the flavor of the wine
so, better. Yeah. Yes. So boil your wine and shallots in a medium saucepan until reduced by half, 20 to 30 minutes. Add 1 tablespoon of butter and the brown sugar. Whisk until butter melts and sugar dissolves. Remove from the heat. Mix in the remaining butter. Set that aside. Preheat your oven, or preheat your grill, or your oven, or
you can do it
yeah, or on the stovetop. So we did it both ways. So preheat your grill, medium high heat. Mix well. Mix your beef, your Worcestershire, your salt, your pepper, and a half a cup of your wine mixture in a bowl. Then form into three burger patties. Grill burgers until brown on the bottom for about 5 minutes or so. Turn your burgers and brush with additional wine mixture. Continue grilling burgers until cooked to desired doneness. Turning and brushing occasionally with wine mixture about 4 minutes longer for medium rare. So if you want it more, which we do it a little bit more. So I want to say I had it on the grill for about 12 to 15 minutes total.
Okay.
Top with a slice of cheese, remove from the grill, grill your buns if you desire, cover top bun on top and serve immediately.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
really yummy.
Yes,
really,
they were really good. Yummy.
So it's basically 1.5 cups of red wine for every pound of ground beef.
Yes.
That you're doing. So if you're making a larger batch, you'd adjust that.
And you're going to have some left over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you could probably
have some wine left over.
Well, you're going to have some of the wine mixture left over.
Oh, okay.
So you could, you could do, if you have like a couple pounds, then you're probably going to have a quarter cup. So you're only going to need a half a cup, and it makes more than that. Okay. So,
all right.
Yep.
Gotcha. So the red wine burgers, they're really, I'm thinking as you're doing the recipe, these are great. The guys can have their beer brats.
Yes.
And the ladies can have their red wine burgers.
Oh, these are incredible.
No, they really were really good. As a side, a white wine cream and ravioli.
Yes. So this is 20 ounces of refrigerated cheese ravioli, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of flour, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, 1/2 cup of dry white wine, 1/2 cup of heavy whipping cream, a quarter teaspoon of Italian seasoning, 1/2 cup of freshly grated Parmesan, salt and pepper to taste. So add water and salt to a large pot, bring to a boil, and add the pasta. Cook until pasta floats to the top, 6 to 8 minutes, drain and set aside. Add the butter to a skillet over medium heat. Once it melts, sprinkle in the flour and cook for a few more minutes, stirring occasionally. Let it turn slightly golden brown. Add the garlic, followed by the wine. Let it bubble until it's reduced by half. Whisk in the cream, then add the Italian seasoning. Cook for a few more minutes until the sauce has thickened up. Then stir in your Parmesan cheese, take off the heat, and season to taste with some salt and pepper. Add the pasta to the skillet, toss until coated, and serve.
Okay.
So.
And then for dessert,
yes.
A wine glass Black Forest dessert.
Yeah. So this isn't using wine. This is just using a wine glass.
And after you eat the dessert, you can drink the rest of the wine from your red wine burgers and your white wine cream and
pour
ravioli.
Pour that in there and mix it all up and make it kind of sweet. That might be good. Good idea.
So the wine glass Black Forest dessert.
Yes. So take a dark chocolate brownie mix, 1/4 cup of espresso, 2/3 cup of vegetable oil, 2 eggs, 2 boxes of instant chocolate fudge pudding and pie filling, 3.5 cups of milk, 1 can of cherry pie filling, 2 tubs of extra creamy whipped topping thawed, and mini chocolate chips. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Spray a 9x13 inch baking dish with cooking spray in a large bowl. Mix together the brownie mix, espresso, oil, and eggs. Pour your brownie mixture into the baking dish and spread to the corners. Bake for 25 to 30 minutes. Let cool. While the brownies are baking, pour pudding mixture into a glass mixing bowl. Add the milk and whisk that until smooth. Cover and refrigerate that until ready to use. Once the brownies have completely cooled, cut brownies into small 1/2 inch squares, place some brownie bites in the bottom of each wine glass, top with some pudding, then some cherry pie filling, then some whipped cream, sprinkle with some of your milk chocolate chips, and refrigerate until ready to go.
Okay.
Yes.
So kind of a layered dessert there.
Yes.
In your wine glass.
Yes.
Was that something that that you found somewhere? Did you have that at one of the wineries?
No,
as well?
I did not have that at one of the wineries, but that would be a good one. I could see that.
I can picture some wineries using that.
Yes, use their special wine glasses and make a dessert. Yep. That would be
So the red wine burgers, the white wine cream and ravioli, and the wine glass Black Forest dessert recipes are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook is where you find those. You can also interact with Kyra there if you have any suggestions on how to play with those recipes a little bit, adjust those. If you have a recipe you want to share, or if you are looking for a specific recipe, you can, query Kyra on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yes.
At Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN on Facebook. It's also linked up at goodmornings.net. You can also email us. goodmornings@wfin.com is how you reach us that way. And there's a link to email us on the website as well at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. A quick note, no podcast on Monday, taking a little extra R&R with an extended weekend, and coming up on Tuesday. Each year, more than 36 children die in hot cars. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is reminding drivers about the dangers and how to avoid them as spring and summer weather approaches. So until Tuesday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.